It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin's alcohol regulations are notoriously arcane. As part of our ongoing High Tolerance series, we'll try to understand these laws and how they became so difficult to comprehend. Alcohol manufacturers, distributors, retailers, we want to hear from you this morning. How have recent changes to Wisconsin's alcohol regulations affected you and your business? Do you own a brewery, winery, or distillery? What are your thoughts on the three-tier system? Or maybe you're an alcohol distributor. How have the laws had an impact on you? Do you agree with the way Wisconsin regulates alcohol, or do you think there need to be changes? Let us know at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. Sean, good morning.
Morning, John.
Wisconsin's three-tier system for regulating the alcohol industry is, as we said, notoriously complicated. Sean, as you've reported on this, what struck you the most about how Wisconsin regulates the alcohol industry?
I was struck on a few occasions by just how complicated it felt. And I'm trying to think about when I started reporting on this and was getting to know kind of the basics of it. You know, one thing that really got me was just the way that the state even identifies its different type of alcohol licenses. So, you know, as you and I are conversing about this here, it's almost hard to talk about it, but there's a Class B license, and then there's a Class B license, and they mean different things depending on where quotation marks appear. So if it's a Class, quote, B, close quote, license, that's for selling beer on premises. If it's a, quote, Class B, closed quote, license, that's something else. That's a liquor license. So that, you know, that to me sort of blew my mind. That's
wow.
Widely accepted, and that's just the way that our alcohol laws are written. But it's well known in the industry that that's the way it goes. And so, you know, when lawmakers see, you know, a budget motion get added to the budget late at night, or even a bill that has a public hearing, you look at these things and they're written in those terms. And so it takes a little homework to kind of know even what they're saying. And then once you know what they're saying, you can start to digest it and make more sense of it.
Well, it seems like applying the adjective arcane is perhaps maybe even understating it a little bit. Can you give us a sense of how this is supposed to work in Wisconsin, at least in theory?
In theory, it all sprung out of prohibition. So, and that's not to say that our laws as they are written now are of the prohibition era, but the system generally grew out of prohibition because from 1920 and through 1933, alcohol was illegal in the United States. And when public sentiment began to shift against prohibition, and it was getting obvious that states were going to have their own alcohol regulations, there was some thought about what that should be like. And so kind of the guiding principle for a lot of these state alcohol laws, because the 21st Amendment left it up to states to regulate this stuff, is this report that was commissioned by John D. Rockefeller. He was a teetotaler. He supported prohibition, but he wanted to make sure that once states got out of prohibition, that there was going to be a regulated alcohol industry, that there was going to be some order to it. And so states kind of looked to this report toward liquor control for guidance. And one of the kind of the guiding principles of this report is that they didn't want to have too much influence from one, you know, they didn't actually use the term tiers, but one part of the industry over the other. So they didn't want to have, for example, what was known as a tied house, where one retailer, let's say a tavern, was under contract from a big brewer to sell exclusively their beer. So that had, before prohibition, you had big breweries that would, you know, sign all these contracts with these bars to get them to sell only their beer. And the thought was that, you know, these breweries were, they weren't even in there. They had no stake in the community. They didn't care if the bars were orderly places. They were kind of chaotic, led to corruption, violence, et cetera. And so this document said, let's try to prevent that. And so that is, that's sort of where the foundation for these laws came from. But the idea of this three-tier system that we talk about today kind of developed years after that.
Well, there are a lot of exceptions to these laws. Let's talk about some of them and why they exist.
So so I'll talk about like the system in theory is three tiers, which are manufacturers, breweries, wineries, distilleries, the people who make the alcohol, wholesalers or distributors. Those terms are used interchangeably, really. Those are the people that deliver the alcohol. And then retailers. So that could be a grocery store, a liquor store, a tavern. It's where you buy the alcohol. So in theory, manufacturers make it, distributors deliver it, and then the retailers sell it directly to consumers. Where there are exceptions to those rules, some of them are historic. You know, like we didn't have a clean three-tier system exactly coming out of Prohibition. So, you know, brewers had retail licenses way back when. Some of them are kind of, I guess, practical. We created a brew, or pragmatic, let's say. We created a brew pub license in Wisconsin in 2007. This was created because there were businesses like the Great Dane in Madison who wanted brew pubs. And so they wanted to have like six restaurant locations potentially where they brewed their beer. So they created a special license for them. You know, so there's those pragmatic concerns over the years, and there are a lot of very specific exceptions to the alcohol laws to let, you know, even a specific restaurant get a liquor license they couldn't get it before, just kind of by the way that they're carved out in the statutes. You know, that's where you see these exceptions. But then you also see in the laws, you see prohibitions, we'll say. Maybe the wrong word since we're talking about prohibition, but we'll see restrictions on what people can do. And sometimes those are also put in there by industries, you know. I think a lot of the restrictions that are put into the laws were backed by, you know, the distributor lobby in many cases to kind of protect the distributor industry.
Who benefits from this system? Who are the winners and losers in this?
It's I would say I would have a hard time looking at it and saying that the laws specifically as they've been changed have not been beneficial for distributors. And that's, I'm not going to say that created a group of losers in the process exactly, because, you know, you just look at Wisconsin in the past decade and the number of breweries has just skyrocketed. Wineries, the same thing, not quite to the extent that breweries have in pure numbers, but wineries are growing all over the place.
And distilleries now, we're seeing a lot of those pop up. Craft distilling is becoming an industry as well. Sean, stay with us. We will continue our discussion of Wisconsin's arcane alcohol laws with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. It's all part of our series, High Tolerance, about Wisconsin's often complex relationship with alcohol. If you are in the industry, what do you think of the way Wisconsin's alcohol laws have been written and applied? How has this affected your business? 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. We're trying to make some sense out of Wisconsin's arcane alcohol laws. WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is with us. Alcohol manufacturers, distributors, retailers, if you're involved in the industry, what do you think of how Wisconsin regulates alcohol? You own a brewery, a winery, or a distillery. We want your thoughts on the three-tier system. Do you agree with the way Wisconsin regulates alcohol, or do you think we need to make some changes? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sean, has there been an unintended side effect of this three-tier system of disagreements or competition between manufacturers, distributors, and retailers?
I guess one side effect has been just that it is a bit confusing for somebody who wants to get into this industry. Just you look at the difference between places that brew beer and sell food. You know, if I want to be a brewer and have a brewery license, I could sell food at two retail locations, but that's it. If I want to be a brew pub, I can sell it at six retail locations, but I can only brew up to 300, or excuse me, I can only brew up to 10,000 gallon barrels of beer per year. If I'm a brew pub, I can't own a brewery. If I'm a brewery, I can't own a brew pub. So there's sort of the one side effect, I guess, is all the confusion. Mm.
And then there's some other weirdness, too. For example, a craft distillery in Wisconsin, I can't order that from Superior. I can't order it shipped to Superior. But if I'm out in Arizona, I can order it.
This is foundational, you know, knowledge within the industry and in the way that part of the system works. If, you know, I talked to a distiller for this story. People can go to his tap room. He knows every ingredient of what he makes, you know, knows what the farmer where he buys the grain, makes the mash, distills it. You can buy the spirits that he bottles at his tap room. But if the bar around the corner who legally buys them runs out of his booze on Saturday night and asks him for a bottle, he can't give it to him. It's got to go through a distributor first, or he could be fined and even jailed. Literally, the statutes say up to 9 months. You know, whether that would actually happen, I don't know. But these are the kind of penalties that exist. And they do vary, as you mentioned, from state to state, because each state's laws and the exceptions and protections that they decide to put in there are up to them.
So there have been some changes in recent years. What are some of the most significant changes we've seen?
Yeah, so what really struck me when we were talking about laws that have their foundation back in 1933 is that in just the past 20 years, there have been some really big changes when it comes to the distributor tier or the wholesaler tier. So, you know, just run through a few of them. In 1999, former Governor Tommy Thompson signed a budget that gave liquor distributors special protections under what's known as Wisconsin's Fair Dealership Law. And practically speaking, this made it harder for larger distilled spirits manufacturers to fire a liquor distributor. So once they've got that contract there with a liquor distributor, they have to show cause to end the contract or else they can't get out of it. In 2003, this is something that was specific for breweries. Governor Jim Doyle signed a law that made it harder for breweries of any size to fire a beer distributor. And what it did is that it said that if you are a beer distributor, you have a contract. Excuse me. If you're a brewer and you have a contract with a distributor, you have to find another distributor to buy out of that contract at fair market value. Hmm. So what does that practically mean? Let's say that I'm a brewer in Dane County and I'm doing $100,000 worth of business, just as a simple number here. If I'm with distributor A, I'm not happy with distributor A. I want distributor B to buy me. Distributor B might have to pay $300,000 to distributor A just to get the rights to sell my beer. And I, as the brewer, don't get a dime of that.
What public purpose is being served here?
So, you know, I can only speak to that law specifically, I understand. Distributors say what you don't realize, what the public doesn't realize, is that we put a lot of money into selling these beers. So if you see a beer truck rolling down, delivering beer in, you know, Madison, for example, if it's wrapped in a Miller Lite logo or it's wrapped in a New Glarus logo, That truck is not owned by Miller Lite. It's not owned by New Glarus. Those are basically just rolling billboards that are owned by the beer distributor. In those cases, that's Frank Beer Distributors in Madison. So they're saying we have to have that brand compensation law to protect the investment that we've made in the brand. But, I mean, it's different. It's a different kind of protection, obviously, than you see in other industries.
Why have distributors been such a powerful lobby for so long? Why does it make sense to favor distributors over manufacturers and retailers?
Well, I mean, they are very active at the Capitol. They have, I think, they're widely regarded as having, a strong lobbying presence there. They also are very active in political campaigns. Wisconsin Democracy Campaign review of donations from distributors going back 20 years, so they'd given $3.3 million. And just to put that into some context, the Democracy Campaign tracks different interest groups by how much they give, and that put distributors in the top 5% of those special interest categories. So, you know, that's pretty high.
Yeah. Craft brewers, though, have been gaining political clout that they didn't have in the past, and we're seeing craft brewers, are we seeing them take up some of the political space that distributors used to?
Well, I would say, you know, distributors have not been alone. They've had, often in their corner, they've had the Tavern League of Wisconsin. And so the Tavern League also gives money, but not as much as distributors. They have this kind of grassroots power. They have 5,000 members throughout Wisconsin. That's almost half of all the liquor licenses in Wisconsin. And they're pretty vocal. What you've seen in the past is that those two groups, when they teamed up, would kind of get what they want. But recently, craft brewers, number one, they've been growing. There's just more of them. And then they're in all these legislative districts throughout Wisconsin. They're popular there. Suddenly they have some political power. Not only that, but they've teamed up with Americans for Prosperity, namely, also other conservative groups who've kind of taken up their cause. I mean, these are groups that don't like regulation particularly, feel like these regulations are sticking it to the little guy, they say. And so you have this alliance of breweries, wineries, distilleries, and Americans for Prosperity, a big big group, a conservative group that gets its funding from the Koch brothers. And they have, it's not that they've been able to get stuff that they want passed in the legislature, but they have been able to get it blocked. So a couple of things that the distributors and the Tavern League wanted last session really didn't go anywhere. They were met with very vocal resistance by Americans for Prosperity and this new coalition of craft producers in Wisconsin.
So why are we sticking with the three-tier system when it's so confusing? Why aren't we changing the laws so they're easier to understand and follow?
This law, it has been described by many people as like 20 pages of law, 200 pages of exceptions. And so to start over from scratch would be, it's not that it's undoable, but you're creating a lot of battles there. Right now they're not able to change too much to the law because there's sort of a standoff between what, you know, we'll oversimplify, I'm calling the old guard and the new guard, right? And so they can't agree to simple changes to the law right now. It would be especially difficult to rewrite the whole thing, and there's been a lot of resistance from, members of the industry to do that, to open things up and start fresh.
Have lawmakers ever considered an alternative way of regulating the state's alcohol industry?
There's all sorts of ways to do it. I mean, I don't remember in my time here anybody sitting down and saying, let's make complete, let's start from scratch, let's do it new. There, in some states, the state, like state government, actually has a huge role in the system. Like they are the distributor tier. So government is an active player in the alcohol industry. We don't have that here. There's other models that people could follow, but really, anytime you talk about a change, it's almost always, it seems like, adversarial. If you help one member of the industry, if you help distributors, it can come at the expense of brewers or distillers. If you help a brewer, a tavern owner, a tavern league might think, hey, that's going against my interests. You know, whether or not that's always the case could be debated, but that's kind of the way they view these changes is when you do something for them, it's hurting me.
This system is so complicated, and we've done a lot of stories trying to explain it here at WPR. It's got to be a tough job just to try to make sense out of all this. Sean, thank you for you and all the other reporters who've been reporting on it and keeping us enlightened.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. You can read more from WPR's High Tolerance series at WPR.org/alcohol. Coming up next, a recent study by UW-Madison students found that medical and decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin could produce more than $1 billion economic benefit, in part from fewer traffic deaths and ER visits. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.